You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
Let me ask you this. My brother, I lost him. He drowned on 911. He was not in New York City, but collateral damage, you might say. But anyway, when my brother was 17 or 18, he had an affair with a little Jewish girl in Poughkeepsie, New York. And she got pregnant, and ironically, this Jewish family ran the Jewish community center there. And in those days, back in the 1960s, shame, talk about shame, they put their tail between their legs and left Poughkeepsie to go run a Jewish community center somewhere else where nobody knew them. And they sent their daughter off to have a baby. Well, 2 years after my brother was gone, the phone rings, and my mother answers the phone. My mother is still alive then, obviously. And this lady on the other end says, "Hi, I'm your granddaughter." My brother never. My mother didn't even know my brother had had a daughter. He had told me secretly, said, "Don't tell Mom, but I think I have a daughter somewhere on the earth." But anyway, so she comes forward, has a son named Eli, a son named Jonah, who are little 6 and 7 year olds at the time, and Joel. And anyway, it was a great reconnection. Then 11 years later, she calls us up, and she's contacted by a young man in upstate New York, and my brother also had a son through another lady, and he's reconciled with us. So here I am walking down the street in Portland, Oregon, with my niece and my nephew, and they're my blood relatives, and I'm just meeting them for the first time as adults in their 40s, you know. It's quite an extraordinary thing. Did your daughter, who you gave for adoption, did she seek you out?
Well, here's the cool thing, Rhett. This is really cool. So when I gave birth to her and gave her up, I wrote a letter and put it in her file because it was closed adoption back in those days. And I put it in her file and I said, if you ever want to seek me out, here I am. And these are family ties that you connect to. And when she turned 18 years old, she went to that same courthouse and got that letter that I gave her up in, and got that letter and flew up here to meet me.
Where is that?
And
here,
we've been together ever since.
What, really? What?
Yeah, it's a beautiful love story. And she and I are very connected. She had 3 children of her own, and so I'm a grandmother through her. And when she came to our house, the social worker called me and she said, "Well, your plan worked. Your daughter is on her way to visit you." And I said, "Fabulous." And I gathered all my kids together and my husband and I, and Jennifer opened the door, and I looked at her, and I thought I was looking in a mirror. We were identical. And she came in, and the whole family gathered around her, and we've been connected ever since.
There must have been a lot of tears that day.
Oh, holy Moses. Yes, there were. Yeah, there were. And it's been a great connection. There have been a lot of things in her life that have changed, and I've been able to be with her as her mom, and she has prayed me through many, many things. Her prayer life is incredible, and it's been a great, great relationship.
What about the people that were so loving and kind to adopt her? Are they still in the picture? Is she still close and friendly and kind to them?
She was. They actually, when she was 4 years old, they divorced. And then they both remarried. They both since passed away. So I actually went to both of their funerals and to be with Jennifer. And before her father passed away, really weird thing, I'd gone down to visit Jennifer, and we were sitting in a restaurant, and he happened to walk in just out of coincidence, I don't believe that there is such a thing as coincidence. God gave us that direction, and he walked in and he came over and he sat down and he looked at me and he goes, I was hoping someday that I could say thank you for your beautiful daughter. So we had a great reunion. I met him. I met her mom when she was still alive. It was pretty amazing.
It is amazing. Wow. So, and so everybody in the family, I mean, here your children now had a half sister, just like my niece now has a half brother. He has a half sister, and he also has other sisters and brothers on Linda's side of the family. That's the lady that my brother lived with in 1969, and got pregnant. He never mentioned to me that he got her pregnant. I don't know if he knew it or not, or if he just blocked it out in his mind. I'm the kind of person that wears my heart on the sleeve. My brother was the kind of person, I never realized the heartbreak he went through when this lady, Debbie Dorfman, who bore his child, he wanted to keep he wanted to marry her. He wanted to spend the rest of his life. He was in love with her. And it was her family because of the Jewish thing that separated them. You're going to talk about shame. Shame on anybody that separates love. But whatever.
Yeah.
Thank God I'm not the Lord, and I'm not here to judge any other man's servant. And everybody belongs to the Lord. So you and everybody else, we're all the private property of the Lord, and all the only one that has the right to judge us is our Master Himself. Now, in the motion picture that you just the motion picture you just got done shooting. I just want to bring, in case you're listening, by the way, folks, we are talking with Kay Hall. Kay Hall wrote the book Beyond the Hidden Veil of Shame, One Woman's Post-Abortion Journey to a Settled and Peaceful Heart. What a great title for a book. And the cover with that lady with her arms outstretched on a mountaintop, looking up at the skies. At least that's what it looks like. Yeah, that's what it is. And it's beautiful. I have not held your book. I have not read your book yet. But are these things that we're talking about, did this all make it into the book, and did all those make it into the movie?
So what made it into the book is I'll send you a copy, Rhett, because I'd really love for you to have a copy. And what happened, I purposely made the book a workbook. I told a little bit of my story, and I wrote prayer in there, and I wrote affirmations for the women, and I put in a journal page, because I really wanted them to go deep into their story, not just read my story. So a lot of this, what we've talked about, is in the book, about my daughter, about the retreat, the playground, and in the movie, all those things are also in the movie.
Wow. I mean, so you wrote this book. How long did it take you to write this book, Beyond the Hidden Veil of Shame?
Once God got a hold of me and made me sit down, it was probably, I made an outline for it. And it probably, I was out in Arizona, it was probably a month, and I just, bam, it just came. It was like unplugged, God, divine push.
Were you already doing your ministry of having these seminars prior to writing the book, or did the ministry come about as a result of writing the book?
No, I had the ministry, and then the book came out, yeah. And I've been doing a lot of, you know, in the church that I was in, I did some, a lot of teaching, Bible teaching and such there, and did grief stuff. And I also have a really cool thing. I went to the Billy Graham Retreat Center and became a chaplain for the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team. And I did that because my dad never, ever went to church, but he watched Billy Graham every time Billy was on the TV. And I never knew my dad to be a Christian. He was, and we were never a father-daughter team. It was very abrasive. But my husband came home from a trip that he was on, and my dad happened to have been in the hospital for a week in a coma. And the doctors were saying, this is the end. And so my husband came home, and he said, we've got to go see your dad. I said, okay, let's go, and I'll get the boys. And he said, no, leave the kids at home. We're going on our own. So we got up to the hospital. My dad, who had been out completely, was sitting up in his bed, reached over to my husband's arm and my arm, and he said, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. I've been born again. And I said, what is going on? And he said, can't you see them? They're glorious. And he passed away.
No.
So I went out to the doctor. I said, what? No, well, yeah. Oh, my gosh, yes. I went out to the doctor, and I said, what is going on? And he said, your dad's vitals were the worst they'd been. I think that you just need to find in your own heart what you think was going on. Because he was fully alert, had eaten a full breakfast, was sitting up, and he was in his in God's glory. Now, I tell you that story, and because when I decided to give back, it was because my dad watched Billy Graham. So I went through the program to be a rapid response chaplain, because I truly believe that through Billy Graham, my dad is in heaven, and I truly believe that God wanted me to see that. A man who I did not agree with or was not close to, abrasive, and yet he made it into heaven.
Well, let me ask you this. So I want to hear this again. Your husband gets the unction. You need to go visit your father in the hospital. You know he's dying, so you go, and then you walk in, and his vitals are the worst they've been, but he's come back for a brief time. He seems to be lucid, and he looks at you and say that again. What did he say?
He said to me, he grabbed our arms, and he said to me, thank you, thank you, thank you. I've been born again. And I looked, and I said, Dad, what is going on? And he said, can't you see them? They're glorious.
Then he passed.
Then he passed.
Died right in front of you.
Yes.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is a new day.
Today's broadcast is supported by Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie. Thanks to Dr. Alex Plain at Plains Dental Arts for keeping New Day with Rhett Palmer on the air daily at WCNO 89.9 FM.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. With suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showing that God is love.